Feed Forest Bathing Podcast with Highland Quiet Life. My name is Kath and I'm a nature and forest therapy guide based in the Cairngorms National Park. Through each episode I'll be chatting with my fellow guide Moose, or some know as Michelle, who is based in Vancouver Island in BC, Canada. As you listen and join the conversation, do let us know about your own nature connections and what resonates with you. And if you'd like to find out more about Highland Quiet Life, head over to www.highlandquietlife.co.uk.
It's really nice to see you again, and I'm glad that we're recording a new episode. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too. I feel like it's been a long time. What have you been up to? What have you been thinking about? What's going on?
Last couple of months have been quite, I hate using the word busy. I find the word busy quite offensive because I feel busy would suggest things are unmanageable and uncontrollable. And I think that's from working in tourism, that to me, busy is like traffic jams and big queues of people. But it's been full in the last couple of months. We'll put it that way. I've had a lot of sessions where I've kind of happened to be traveling around, and stuff with the kids has started again, and still doing stuff down in West Lothian at Craig's Farm, and a few private bookings, and the community group's going really well. I was telling you before we started recording a couple of weeks ago, I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to say about anything, but a couple of weeks ago I was filming for a TV program which will be on screens in the autumn. I'm slightly scared to tell people when, because I kind of want to watch it first and make sure I didn't come across as an idiot, but I don't think I will have done. But it's been exciting.
That's fantastic. I look forward. Do you have some idea when it, did you say when it's going to show? When does
September.
It air?
All I know is September at the moment, and it's got a good prime time slot. So we'll see. So they'll let me know once things are done. But yeah, that was really exciting to filming forest bathing. It was good fun. Yeah. And
that's
what about
awesome.
Yourself? What have you been up to?
You know what? This is the season where I'm teaching, so I've been doing a lot of that. But interestingly, there's a real intersection about sort of what we're going to talk about, you know, and what we do in forest bathing, and some of what I set up when I teach as well. I'm taking a course right now on climate change and decolonizing mm-hmm. ourselves as students. That is led by an Indigenous scholar here in Victoria named Vanessa Andriotti. And it has, as some of the work that we're doing, time in the forest and reflection. So there's some really interesting intersections there too for me around mm-hmm. both my own practice around meditation, forest bathing, and you know, being a learner and taking a course and thinking deeply around climate action and decolonization and complexity. So yeah, so that's sort of where I am right now. I'm looking forward to the spring is absolutely full on here. So I'm looking forward to more time getting outside. I spent the weekend in forests in Vancouver, and so I'm feeling really, really connected. Yeah, and part of the land. But I look forward to this conversation.
Yeah, and our first episode we're kicking off with the importance of safe spaces, and that being able to be vulnerable and being able to feel supported, because I think that's incredibly important, not just in the work that we do, but in life in general, for sure.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. And it's something that I work really hard with Highland Quiet Life, with forest bathing, because I know what it's like to not feel safe or to feel judged. And the one thing that has always struck me by nature and the trees and the environment is there's no judgment there. It's a bit like dogs. You know, you can be completely you. You don't have to be on guard to a certain extent with dogs. But with trees, definitely not. You know, the trees don't judge. And that's a talk that I've done for groups in the past. And because in the past, you know, and even today, you know, I do still experience a hell of a lot of judgment, and, you know, and too many people do in this world, and can be for things that you've got absolutely no control over. So for me, when I was setting up Highland Quiet Life, I had that sort of light bulb moment when I was forest bathing in the Adirondacks, and I realized this is what I want to do, and I want to be able to do forest bathing and this practice for people that really need it and can really benefit from it. But underpinning that very early on is I wanted to kind of set the tone for how sessions were and how the expectations for people and what they could expect. And so anyone that books on sessions with Highland Quiet Life, they get a little spiel as part of their booking, which just talks about how what our basic group expectations are. And these might be kind of an interesting part for us to be able to then pick apart a bit. So for me, for basic group expectations, I've got connectedness. So we support the social interaction. There's no pressure to share anything with the group, but the group is supportive of people that want to. I have hope and optimism listed there. During the session, as we know, the forest and nature around us is the therapist and not the guide, and that we encourage people to let nature support them and give them that optimism that they may be lacking at the time. And also identity. Everybody has a voice. I ask people to use appropriate language. I make sure that we don't stigmatize or use terms that might cause offense or talk over each other. And that's something that I think has become more and more important to me in life, that I spend a lot of time in recovery groups where we respect and we don't talk over each other, and everybody has a chance to speak. And it becomes more and more noticeable when you do get talked over, you know, in the real world. And then the last bit of my expectations for Highland Quiet Life is the empowerment, and understanding that life can affect everybody differently and that challenges can arise, but that we have to take some responsibility for communicating that to other people if we're starting to feel something, or if things are shifting. So, and also, you know, this importance. We talk about it at times that when you have people in a session and they can get very emotional or they maybe cry, and we support each other if they do have that emotional reaction, and that we will just be mindful and just let people. And it's almost having that kind of empathetic side where you just allow it to happen. That person doesn't need you to identify with them and say, oh, well, when this happened to me, or they don't need you to try and fix it. They need you just to hold that space and let them feel what they need to feel. Yeah. There you go.
So those are the expect so that sort of setting the expectations
Yeah.
of what the experience will be like. You're opting, you're agreeing to those things by showing up and participating, and then supporting that sort of safe space for other participants as well.
And you know, it's reminded me of something there, because I feel it gives me something to go back on as well, that if we're in a group and it's a mixed group of people that don't know each other, I feel it's something I can kind of reference and just say, look, you know, part of what we expect. But it's reminded me of when I was doing this filming the other week, that they were really hot on certain words or certain phrases, that it was a oh, we're not supposed to say things like that, and it, you know, we can't say that because of, and I still think there is so many words and phrases in society that we've grown up with that you don't necessarily think everything, you know, you're never going to catch everything, but it's that willingness that if somebody actually corrects you or just brings it to your attention, to take that on board and say, oh, okay, yeah, I didn't realize, I'm sorry, or you know, and to not do something again. And that was really obvious a couple of weeks ago during the filming, actually. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, my colleague Patricia talks about that. Like, you sit on the log with someone with your arm around them and look at it and say, like, why is that a problem? And how do we not do that again? So it's a what we would call calling in. So saying, like, here's where we agreed that we would do these things that will build community and build your experience. You refer back to that instead of stigmatizing someone's behavior. It allows us to say, these are the sort of community guidelines that we agreed to, what makes this a positive experience, rather than like the don'ts, right? So it's like, there are going to be lots of don'ts. There are going to be lots of, we're human, we're going to mess up. But the idea is, we're going to come back to this sort of set point of these things build an experience, they build us up. And this is what we're looking to do, to create this kind of container of an experience where folks can feel like they can You know, we talk about safety, but one of the things I talk about in my classes is a brave space rather than a safe space. And I think that that might have come up too in our training, right? Where it's like, it's safe enough to feel like you can be brave. It's not always going to feel safe. Like people, I've, you know, had this conversation with people recently around the idea of getting, you know, super offended if someone calls you in or points out something. And it's like, it's our work to sit with the being uncomfortable, right? To know that in that discomfort, that's where the growth comes from. And so rather than saying, don't challenge me on things, or, you know, I don't want to hear it, or get defensive, checking ourselves that when that happens, that's an opportunity for growth. And that takes being courageous. That takes, you know, looking for a worldview that says, I don't have all the answers, as opposed to acting as though we do. So yeah, I love the idea of, is the space safe enough to be brave?
Yeah, I love that phrase. I'm going to steal that. I think that's
Yeah.
a really lovely way to put it, I think. Yeah, that's lovely. And I think it becomes more obvious because obviously I have this monthly group that runs now that I'm seeing a lot of the same people every month. So the group is seeing each other every month. And it is a space where people can start to be brave and go into that stretch zone and do things that they wouldn't necessarily always consider. And it's a really nice way to think about it, about being brave. Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking too about what when you let people know that, you know, this, there can be emotion, there can be these things, it just always strikes me that that connection to the land and that release of emotion, like tears or whatever it is, the place where we're so disconnected that there is that sort of release or that connection, or even the grief of the having been disconnected, that I think comes up for so many people. Like it's something we can expect, right? When we run this kind of programming, that emotional response is a piece of it. And then the healthy part of that also being that the I think one of the safest non-judgmental places to take our grief and pain is the forest, is earth, is being in nature, is being connected to the land as a non-judgmental entity that we're part of, right? And that we've been so disconnected from in our houses, in our workplaces, in our day-to-day lives, in the fullness that can sometimes disconnect us. I can't think of a walk where someone hasn't been sort of emotional in there, in whether it's an individual or groups where that deep connection happens. And I'm sure some walks it doesn't happen, but when that deep connection, individual connection happens, that's one of the responses. And I think that that's a sign of healing, right? A sign of release and healing, and also that the space is safe enough for that to happen too.
Yeah, and I think we can be so busy at times trying to hide what's really going on, in our heads or behind our eyes, that you need that chance to switch all of that off, which you aim to do during a forest bathing session, and then it sneaks out because you've forgotten to keep the lid on it or to keep it hidden. And particularly, that moment of just sitting with a tree or befriending a tree or whatever you're doing that, you've forgotten to keep it switched on, switched off, and it just comes out. And so often, when we keep these things inside and build them up for however long a period of time, it comes out bigger than it probably would have done the first time, and it just
Totally.
builds. And it's I had a group at the weekend, one of the groups that I was out with, and on the way back I did just one of the ladies had said she felt like she was at a wedding because she couldn't stop crying. And then on my way back I was just like, are you okay? And she was like, it's just a lot of stuff that needed to come out. But sometimes it's the people that you least expect that you see, and the people that you think are maybe not really wanting to fully embrace, but they give themselves that permission. And that's another reason why I feel so lucky for being able to do what we do, is because people feel that they can be vulnerable in during a session and around us as guides. And that's a real a blessing. I don't know if a blessing is the right word, but it's a privilege. It's a privilege. That's, to for people to trust you to be able to be like that around you as well.
I think blessing is great. I think the earth has all kinds of blessings. Or in the middle of spring, it's like the blessings abound. I find it really interesting. I mean, the stigma around crying and like the very natural experience of doing this. I wanted to, when as you were talking, I realized for any of our listeners that haven't done a forest bathing session, because we talk about group and sharing, it the invitations are invitations to go and connect individually. So we do both the sort of dispersing and going and doing your own exploring or even not moving very far or whatever the invitation is, and then coming back with the invitation if you want to talk about what your experience has been to whatever degree, or dance it out, or whatever it is, whatever, however you want to share what that experience is, but that that truly, like the invitations are individual for you to connect in any way that you see fit, either to do it or not do it, even, but that they are individual experiences. It's not that you're sitting around in a group and having these experiences and necessarily being witnessed by someone else. In fact, I think almost every time I've participated, I go off by myself, like where I don't see someone else as much as possible. That it's about for me to feel, safe, to feel brave. I need to not be witnessed in that. I need to, except for by the land and human world around me, and then I can come back and share that. But also often the coming back and sharing also for me has elicited at times an emotional, telling of or recounting or still in it experience. But yeah, this is for folks that haven't done it. It's not a great big group activity where you sit around necessarily and encounter these things together, but it's that creating a space where folks can explore. I think I've talked about this before here at one session where we added some sound bath to it. So like a beautiful sort of quiet accompanying. We started in a circle and then dispersed into the area that we were in. We were kind of what we call spoking out. So taking a space and walking out from where we were and then coming back into that circle again after the invitation. And so the person who was doing the sound bath was sort of sitting where the circle was, and people dispersed to go participate in the invitation whatever way. And I had one participant that stayed right next to the sand bath, and I thought, fascinating. Like, and it's in the forest. It's not like that was in a parking lot and people walked in, and it was all in the forest. And when we came back and the invitation was there, if folks wanted to share, because I of course had also sort of like gone and been in beyond the space and given them some room as well. That participant said that they sat there weeping the whole time, that they're actually they lay there weeping the whole time in the sand bath and looking up at the trees and being in the forest. And it just was one of those happenings where I had no idea that's what was going on. And you trust the process as a guide that the forest will give what the person needs, and the person will be led if the safe space and the brave space is there for them to take that, right? And to be where they need to be.
You make me think of, and it doesn't happen often, but it happens regularly enough that, if the weather's okay and it's not absolutely freezing, I always try, I always finish with a sit spot of a certain length of time. And occasionally, but regularly enough, somebody will leave where we are. I'm conscious I'm going to set up for a tea ceremony and there's going to be clanking of cups and me faffing about. And they will have literally gone like two or three trees down the, they won't have gone far at all. And I'm sitting there desperately trying not to make noise because I'm conscious it's so close. And then I sort of think, actually, they're probably fine. They've chosen to stay relatively close. They have seen other people that have trekked off into the woods, never to be seen again. And they've chosen to stay close. And often it's the people that aren't used to being outside. And that still surprises me, and it's wrong that it should still surprise me about how nervous people are in just going in the forest on their own. And the forest we're in, you know, although the Highlands are covered in massive amounts of forest, it's not like a forest where you'll get, it's not Narnia, you know, they're not likely to get lost. It's pretty easy where we are, and quite, you know, light and lots of gaps and stuff. And but still, just it is completely against everything they would normally do to just wander off on their own in a direction. And I've had to kind of get my head around that actually that's okay. They could still choose to move if I was making too much noise, you know, it's kind of and it's yeah, it's just remembering that people just aren't used to, or they are used to, you know, that there'll always be a couple of people that'll maybe wander together and they'll talk while they're wandering. And I remember somebody talking about that at our training, one of the trainers, and saying, you know, how it really kind of bothered them once that this couple talked the whole time. And I always think of that, and I just think, well, that's how they feel safe. And they're not being disruptive, they're not on the phone, they're not shouting, but that's what they need to do. And yeah, nothing I can do, you know. That's what, I'm not going to sit there and say, you have to walk on your own. You have to go at least 200 meters away from me and be silent, you know. They do what they need to do. But on the other side of that, I have had people before that have wanted to video the whole thing, and other members have kind of brought it to my attention, and I've had to speak to it. You know, there's that level of, you know, things that are disruptive and things that aren't, and people do
Totally.
need to do in the woods, you know.
And that safety and being within shouting range or of you or the guide, whatever, can also be around bears and cougars and the kinds of things that are here. That also, I love that it's not Narnia. I love your like, it's not Narnia. Here comes the what was she, the White Witch. It can also be that piece around safety. If going into the forest and being around cougars and bears and whatever else you might, we've got lots of snakes that are out in the fields right now. Little They're just little black harmless snakes, but the folks that are concerned about that or afraid of that or whatever, with having you as sort of the safety there, the guide is the safety there, is a piece of that too, right?
And it's I think as a guide as well, you know, it's I feel like I'm just talking from the participant's point of view, but it's just important as a guide that I feel safe in the group of people that I'm with, and that I feel that I can, vulnerable is maybe the wrong word, but I feel that I can be authentic, and I don't have to, like, we all have different masks that we use. You know, people at work get a different version of me to them people do at a group, or that people forest bathe, and on my family, or, you know, everybody gets a version of. I am not somebody that is my 100% authentic self in front of anybody and everybody. I'd be crucified, I think. I don't know. I don't, is that similar for you, or are you just you wherever you are?
I kind of a little bit just me, but I mean, obviously within professional settings and other places, like
There's the level.
there's a line for sure. Like it's not, there's a line, but anyway, you were saying, in
Yeah, so
terms of
it got me
vulnerable.
thinking, because I've been thinking about this in the last week, because I had some work recently. I don't I need to be careful because I'm not sure who listens to this, but I had some work recently, and there was something in me that I knew my heart wasn't in it, and I wasn't wanting to do what it was. And it was part of my forest bathing, my nature and forest therapy, and I was kind of dragging my feet on it, but I was prepared, and I was going to do it, and it, you know, fine. You know, I was kind of just going through it, but I didn't have that spark of, I'm really up for this. You know, not like when I know I'm going to speak to you and there's this little spark that's exciting. And I spoke to Pete about it, and I was like, I don't want to do this. And it's because I needed to be vulnerable, and I wasn't sure about the people that I was going to be with, and I didn't feel that that was somewhere where I felt I could be me, and it was treated respectfully or confidentially, or I wasn't sure. And I spoke to Pete about it, and he was like, "Well, you can tell that your heart's not in it because you've been dragging your feet and stuff." And the minute I made that decision and I gave my apology, and it was part of something else, so it wasn't any biggie that I cancelled somebody's exciting day or anything. But as soon as I made my apologies, I felt so much better, and I knew it was the right thing to do because it didn't align with what I wanted to do, or the people, or the environment. And I had no control over the environment, or the people, or how things were ran. And it was just that. And I think the more and more that I'm in the environments that I want to be in, I become really less tolerant of the ones that I don't want to be in. And it comes down to safety, and it comes down to knowing that I can be me, and I don't have to worry about how I'll be interpreted, or things like that. And
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In some of the circles that I listen to and sort of a go to for teachings, they talk about the sort of a full body yes and the feeling of what it feels like to be a no, right? And be able to say no. And you said make my apologies, which is that we would say I bowed out or whatever. I realized, I was like, made your apologies. Why are you apologizing? Oh, I see what
I'm
you're saying.
British. We must apologize for
Yeah, I know. And we are a British colony, and yet at the same time, there are some things that have not trickled down or to us across. Yeah, that idea of safety for us, but also, like, again, what you're saying, and I think authenticity is a piece of it, where you can bring your authentic self in that, like you're big enough and you're not going to be asked to make yourself smaller, or you're not going to be asked to, or if you're being asked to to share, or the kinds of stuff we're talking about, that there will be the kinds of boundaries and parameters that make it safe enough to do that, right? And I think and I was feeling that out the entire time we were on our course. Like, that was one of the things for me, that there were times where I was like, I'm not sharing this. And it would be like in especially in the first few days, and it took a while. For me, it was about also the guides, the instructors being creating a safe enough space that I felt like where I would go. And I think as a learner, that's a big piece for me too, right? And because it is experiential, as a guide, you have a foot in it. And even if you're participating, in the field and in the work or the kinds of stuff you're talking about, that you're impacted by it, you're showing up with, you're living the principles that you just read to us, right? You're showing up with that, because like meditation, or like other or places where we're either, when we are guiding or we're setting this up, we are also participating in some way in it. So those parameters that you mentioned at the beginning, and that we're talking about in terms of creating, a safe space, we expect that you're living those to whatever, in an authentic way, and in whatever way you profess to do it, right? That is interesting for me, in terms of, we just had a class that we were talking about this, in terms of living our politics, like living these principles as much as possible. Not just espousing them and then walking away and being, completely an aggressive idiot in our car as we drive away. I'm always conscious of that when I drive away from campus and I'm doing this values work with students, and both courses I teach have a lot of values work in it. And we start with the same kind of guidelines you talk about. Like, I'm ticking them off in my mind around what I say and then what I also say. And essentially for me, it's just like, how do you create a safe community? What does a safe, brave community look like? And these are the guidelines, whether it's an online community, whether it's an in-person community, whether it's a session for 3 hours or whatever it is, right? What are these things? But yeah, I'm always conscious as I drive off, and I'm like a little bit of a Toronto driver still. You can take the girl out of Toronto, but you can't take the Toronto driving out of the girl. And I'm like, don't be an aggressive idiot.
Trying
Like,
to
you
be the
never know if
most
it's a student.
serene version of you as you drive away.
Yeah.
I always say there's one group that I guide for, and it's relatively regular that I guide for them. And I have to be really careful about anonymity in this. It's a relatively regular group, and I always turn up, and the people I meet are just like running around like headless chickens, like the most unrelaxed versions of people possible. And I have to like a while ago, it would kind of put me off, and it would kind of rub onto me, and I'd get a bit irritable and stressed out. And now I have to be, I just turn up and try and do that whole, I am serene and I am calm and I'm just going to let you bounce off me and blah, 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 blah. But it's really because you don't want to be that person that's like an utter arse. And then as soon as the session starts, it's so we're going to be like really respectful of each other. And then just it's a bit like the sort of the person in the kind of, I don't know, the sort of the retreat kind of thing that right beforehand was like, puffing on a fag and knocking the whiskey back. And then it's like, anyway, we're going to eat vegan this weekend and we're going to be clean and it's going to, it just wouldn't work, would it?
Snacking on social media while you're at a
Yeah.
meditation
And
retreat.
I'm always really conscious in a session that like when I send people off, I don't want to then just sit on my phone and just wait for them to come back. I as much as I can do, because there's bits we need to do in between the invitations, I will make a point of doing something. I don't want them to like, I may be taking photos and stuff, but I don't want them to turn around and I'm just sitting there looking at Facebook waiting for them to come back or something, and that's the same for the sit spot. Once the tea ceremony is kind of set up, I will make sure that I go and take a few moments to just sit and and that's important. I think that it helps you be part of the group rather than you're the person that they have to do as they're told and kind of the way that they look at you. I'm just going to shut my window because my neighbor's cutting his grass.
Can't hear a thing, but
Oh, good. Okay.
it may show up on the. I've got someone drilling, or I've got someone cutting, sawing wood outside. So I'm
All
hoping
right.
that's not
My
showing up in the.
neighbor, he's got a garage in his back garden, and inside there's like a full vintage Volkswagen Beetle and a tractor engine. And if it's a really good day, they'll all get started up. And my office window is like at the end of the house next to his garden.
Right, that's hilarious.
But we're just grass cutting today. We're not turning
Nice.
tractor engines over, apparently.
That's a lovely thing to do in the evening of a Scottish evening.
What, turn your tractor over?
No, mow your lawn.
Yes, yeah. Although I am making sure that we stick to no mow May, and our
Nice.
grass is not being mowed. We tried to go on to no mow June last year as well, but Pete broke. But the back end of our garden is left completely wild. So, and in my head, we've got areas that are completely wild. So,
Yeah, so the pollinators have
yeah.
access. The other thing I wanted to talk about too, in from the perspective of creating a safety, like and for us too, it's important to talk sort of culturally around safety too. So in North America, being really clear to talk about what land we're on, whose land we're on, what's happened to that land through colonization and through sometimes forestry and if there's a return to the land on being planned or those kinds of pieces. And that is the first part of what I do in terms of the setup for any kind of forest bathing session. And it's also often really fascinating too to do that work. I've done a couple of remote sessions where I had the person identify where they were going to be. Like they were nowhere, like they weren't in Canada, so they were nowhere near where I was or lands that I knew or was familiar with at all. And so that's always been fascinating to go back and try to find and do some of the work to acknowledge what lands they're on and what the history has been. And so that for me is also a piece around cultural safety, regardless of who's on my walk or who we encounter, but to do that work about the history of the land and think forward around, like in Canada, we've had a truth and reconciliation process around Indigenous people's experiences of colonization, but also in relationship to land. Obviously, place-based pieces around truth and reconciliation are important. And so how am I participating, or how am I creating, working towards reconciliation by doing that in a way that isn't just sort of a performative, or just like a, we have what we call land acknowledgments, and at the beginning of classes or sessions or events, and it can just kind of seem like lip service, as opposed to like, where are we now in relation to true reconciliation? So that's, it's been an interesting practice to kind of deepen that over the years and think about what that means. And the course that I'm taking now will most likely add to that as well, in terms of what my practice is around the cultural safety or those pieces at the beginning of the session, but generally, like, keep bearing that in mind as well. It might be something that I integrate more into as I go along as well. But sort of that's a piece of it for me in terms of safety.
Yeah. And is there ever a random question, but is there ever a time when you have been guiding and you have been aware that the group doesn't feel as safe as it should do or as connected as it should do? Have you had to deal with anything as a guide, being anonymous, obviously, or not?
I don't think I've had to deal with that as I haven't had anyone raise that to me, or put it in an evaluation. I haven't noticed it. I have had that experience as a learner, as we know. But I haven't had that experience. Have you had that? Have you been aware?
Because I was asking you that, and then that got me thinking. So I've had a couple of times where I've had groups, and it's only happened when there's been men and women, generally couples in groups, and it's the only times it's happened is when one of the men has started sharing and actually started properly sharing something back, and it's got quite deep or quite surprising. And then maybe one or two of the rest of the group have kind of taken the piss and or thought that they were taking the mick, and they've kind of then made them feel a bit awkward by thinking that they were joking, and you kind of feel a bit sorry for it. So I think that made me become more aware of needing to make sure that we set that tone at the beginning, because then you know what it's like. If you're sharing something deep and meaningful and someone takes the mick, I climb up immediately and I'm like, oh, well, that's fine. We'll talk about something else. We're done. We're fine. Everything's fine. Yeah, no, we're all good. And that's what happened. So I think, that made things a lot more aware. And then that I wasn't actually thinking of this when I asked you the question, but in the autumn, I was guiding. Did I tell you about the shoelace? Did I tell you about my
I don't think
shoelace
so.
incident? It was one of those really sort of magical, simple things. And I think as well, as part of making sure that groups feel safe or that they know a little bit about who you are or whatever. And I've always had multicolored shoelaces in my trainers. For years I've had it, that, and it started off when one snapped and I changed one bit. I didn't change, and now it just is. And for ages, it's that I've got a rainbow shoelace in one and a green one in the other. Green's my favorite color. But there was it started. This is very waffly. But it started that my shoelaces, one of my shoelaces snapped. The shoelaces I had to hand were some rainbow laces that I'd picked up at Pride when we'd been to Pride recently. And I only changed the one that had broken. I didn't think to change both shoelaces. I just changed the one that was broken. And then it's always kind of stuck like that because people kind of comment or they'll ask questions about why. Why have you got different colored shoelaces? But I was guiding this group in the autumn, and at the end of it, somebody asked if they could just have a quick word with me afterwards. And they were kind of being ushered off of, well, we haven't really got time, and don't be too late and stuff. And she just asked me, she said about it must have been my shoelaces. And she said, I think I'm the only one here, and thank you for making me feel comfortable without asking like who I was, and and I'd but just that feeling comfortable. And I could, she just looked so small at that moment that she was in with this group of people for a week, and she just said, I think I'm the only one here. And then she was being ushered away, and I just felt so like it reminded me that importance of setting the tone at the start that people can feel safe. And I obviously hadn't told you that before.
That's a fantastic story.
But these little things I've been
That's
pulled.
not a little thing. Visibility is a huge thing, and creating that kind of safety is huge, right? Like, it's like cues that, right. So Kath's made me cry. So you're either going to edit this out,
That can
or
be
you're
your
going to leave it in. I'm
decision.
totally okay if you leave it in. I'm totally okay if you leave it in. There's a context to how meaningful that is, but yeah. So let me just say, like, from the position of feeling unsafe in the world, like literally physically feeling unsafe in some places to be who you are, right? Whether it's that, it's your race or your sexual orientation or your gender presentation or like the way the world sees you, not the way you are authentically, but the way that that gets taken up in the world, that there are ways that we can embody being other than the acceptable straight. Well, the Barbie movie. I don't have to get into the patriarchy and racism, but we look for visual cues of where we're safe. Like, we look for visual cues that make it. That's why, like, you'll see like rainbows, this is a safe space stickers and that kind of stuff, which generally I also don't trust. Like, you never know if the person that put that up is the person who's working in the store that day or whatever, right? It's like, unless it's like covered in, whatever. And in this case, you're talking about, being queer and pride and having a place to be other than heterosexual. But we scan for those signs and those cues that it's safe. And so, yeah, so that's a welcoming way of just having that visual cue that person can most likely for that whole time relax differently or more. I'm guessing I would have relaxed differently and more knowing that, oh yeah, this is someone who's choosing to wear a symbol that would mark someone who is accepting, regardless of what outwardly how you're talking or whatever, right? That if you know that a rainbow is associated with pride or the varying ways that different colors are, whether it's trans pride or non-binary pride or whatever it is, if you're choosing to wear those, you're choosing to get marked as potentially also other than heterosexual or queer, or at least an ally, right? And that's also brave in a world where it's not acceptable. And very much those identities, our identities are under fire. So that's why you made me cry. That's
Well,
lovely.
I still have my shoelaces.
I
But it's these little cues. And that's part of the reason why I think I didn't want to do this work that I cancelled recently, because I and it's unfair to say that I know, but I suspected the kind of people that were going to be there weren't going to look like me, weren't going to sound like me. And I wasn't going to feel, I was going to feel conscious of who I was. And I would rather walk through the world or be around people where I don't feel conscious of who I am or what I look like and things. And it's all these things as guides that we have to be aware of. And you said there about, like if someone's got the sticker, but you don't know if the person working there agrees with the sticker and stuff. And that's so right, because there's so many companies out there that will list all of these values and how they operate. And actually, it's just text on a website, it doesn't mean anything. And I had contact with a company like that recently where they warned me before the session that one of the people was incredibly overweight and unfit. And I know who it was because it was the only person of a certain age group. And they warned me ahead of time. And I thought, oh, well, okay. And I turned up. And I would not even have looked at this person twice, let alone once. The only way I know who they were in the group is because of the age group that they were in that they described. And that was immediately makes me feel not very safe or secure in that group. And it's all these things that unless you experience the shittier end of the world, you've got no concept of how your words can damage people or over here, and it is so important that the values that we have are what we actually deliver on the day, to the group.
So Absolutely. Yeah.
Ah, and on that bombshell.
It's a great bombshell. It's not a bombshell at all. I mean, I think it's a beautiful point to end on in terms of also the call to align our values with what it is that, and to be aware of that alignment and living in that alignment of that, the higher kind of values that we're talking about, and to check ourselves on those as well, right? As much as possible.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, so what's coming up for you now? When's your next venture outside and your nice walk or somewhere that you go?
Well, I mean, I need to do some of that for the course that I'm doing, so that'll be this weekend. It's a long weekend. I've been full on with like teaching and travel and meetings and but I had the pleasure of being on a writing retreat in Mexico, so got grounded and got into the sun and the air and the land and the water, and that was pretty incredible. So I haven't felt disconnected. I don't have guiding anywhere. I guess I should check my website and see if anyone's email around that. It'll be my practice of getting into the forest and getting grounded in the next couple of days. I'll definitely do one of my walking meditations with Leah on the weekend. I've got time. I can do that and do like a 10K where I spend about 50 minutes of it doing a walking meditation. But yeah, that's sort of it for me. Until I get into June, it just stays about teaching and grading and that kind of stuff. What's up? What's coming up for you?
I'm back with my school kids next week, which will be fun. So it's nice finally doing sessions that feel warm and the weather's nice. And the last couple of weeks, the sessions have just been lovely and warm, and millions of layers haven't been needed. So yeah, I'm back with
Yeah.
my school kids next week, and then the next session will be the community group, which will be the first Sunday in June. Flipping heck, 2nd of June that'll be. Jeez.
Yeah. I feel
Summit.
like May just gone by in a flash. Like I just like I've been like, where's this month going? It's the 15th. Like, how is it the 15th? I have like,
Hello.
yeah. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. And there'll be a blog post that's connected to the
Yeah,
podcast as well.
so if people want to know more thoughts along different lines, then have a look at the blog as well. And we'll be back for our next episode, which I can't remember what the theme is, but it'll be something
Right.
wonderful that we'll.
Fantastic. Well, it's so great to catch up with you, and obviously these topics hit deeply with me, and I appreciate the work that you're doing. I just think it makes the world a better place the more that we put this kind of energy and space and healing opportunities out in the world, and I appreciate that you're doing it, and I look forward to seeing it on TV sometime in September as
Yes,
well.
definitely. Well, not long. Yeah. Oh, great to catch up with you. Thanks again. All
Thank
right.
you.
Thank you for listening to the Highland Quiet Life podcast. If you like what you heard, then please make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And also get in touch and let us know about your own nature connections. You can find me, Kath, guiding forest bathing sessions in the Cairngorms in Scotland and at highlandquietlife.co.uk. Or Michelle is over on Vancouver Island in BC and is at sitkaforestimmersion.com. And again, thanks for listening.